Good morning, everyone. So nice to see you all again. I do have to say, when I started, like, how are you going to fill six shiurim on Shabbos? We didn't cover literally nearly half of what I thought we would. We ran through yesterday. We did the Aseres HaDibros, which really needed three sessions on its own. The two Aseres HaDibros, we did it very quickly yesterday. And today we have to finish the Mishkan. So it is what it is. But let's start with a story. I always like to start with a Shabbos story as we begin our sessions together. I had the great opportunity. I think he was a scholar resident at Yad Gezerl of Woodmere this past Shabbos. A fellow named Amit, who was a veteran of the IDF. He was in the interrogation unit. I don't know if there's, I'm sure there's an official name for that. Spent 18 years interrogating terrorists. When they would catch various terrorists, and he would interrogate them to get all the information that they can out of them. And he spoke with a small group of Rabbanim before the Shabbos program. Really just fascinating stories on things that he did. What I want to zero in on is he like sort of mentioned almost offhand at one point that he became Shomer Shabbos recently. And he had grown up traditional. Said in his family in Israel, they made Kiddush. And they would have a meal together, and then everybody would do their thing. That was like the extent of their Shabbos. But there was no Shmira Shabbos. They'd make Kiddush, and they would have a meal. And very recently, he started keeping Shabbos. So you might say, like, okay, what would, if you had to guess, such a fellow who's been like face to face with murderers and terrorists, and he was in a terrorist suicide bombing in 1999 when he was a young man and survived the bus bombing in which 26 others did not survive. Take such a person and say, like, what would drive you now later in life as you're in your 50s to take this on? So we didn't ask him that question, but he sort of on his own sort of offered it. And he said, what was it? It was... He started coming to the States to lecture on the speaking tour, both as an Israeli, former IDF, now just as a citizen. And he was brought in a year or so ago to a shul in California, and it was an Orthodox shul, and he was a Friday night speaker. So they had they have a dinner, and everybody came, and then he spoke. And he said, and he's speaking to the people, and he's like, something's different. Something's different. And when he put his finger on it, he said, they were present. Nobody had a phone. They were listening. They were engaged. And I haven't had a conversation with a group of people who were present to life. And I was like, I just want that. And it was like just an amazing thing. Like it wasn't the creation of heaven and earth. It was, this idea of, and we need it so desperately to be able to unplug and be present for our spouses, be present for our children, be present for ourselves. It's just we take it for granted sometimes what we're doing over Shabbos, what it means to sit around a Shabbos table and have nobody on a phone is... a gift. It's a gift of presence. And I share that as just, I was very taken by the whole story. It reminded me of something that I meant to say last week that I didn't. And that is, we spoke about the Zohar v'Shomer, the Yira and the Ahava, the fear and the love and the do's and the don'ts of Shabbos. And how they were B'dibur Echanem. They were said together. And even though the Ramban we learned last week says that Ahava is a greater measure, but they were still set together simultaneously, the Yira and the Ahava. So I had a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael who used to share the story, I remember, of his youngest of, I don't know, seven or eight children. So the youngest, as you know, in a large family like that, like, it's just a different experience. Because, like, whatever, if there is such a thing as bedtime still for a youngest child in a large family, and it's debatable if there is, my children will tell you that my youngest does not have one, and it's not fair, and she's, like, not being brought up the same way that we were. And it's totally true. I would not deny that at all. So whatever extent you try to put a youngest to sleep, certainly when they're really young, like, still in a crib age, but, like, the house is rocking. Because, like, the kids are much older. Like, no one else is going to sleep at whatever time that is. So he used to describe how his youngest, his son, used to, like, throw a fit every time they tried to get him into his crib because he didn't want to be missing out on whatever else was going around. But then once he would get there, his crib was like right near a window, and there was like other stuff outside of the window. And once they got him into his crib, they couldn't get him, you know, they had to like rearrange the whole room because he was like totally fixated on what was going on outside, and he just loved it. And he used to bring that as an example of what was going on outside was drawing his attention. But you wouldn't know it unless you got put into a box and everything else was closed off. As long as there were all these distractions about what was going on inside the house, like, this is great. But there's something else that you really want, and every night you love it. Yeah, but I'm like distracted. When you are put into a box, then like you look around like, hey, I like it here. But only if you're put there. And the yira, the lotah says, all of the prohibitions of Shabbos, which if you start with that, you're like, I can't do this, I can't do that. And yeah, it's true. Once you're in that box, you can look around and you're like, this is really nice. I would have never known about this if you didn't take certain things away from me and put me in a box. So that they come simultaneously. You have to have the lotuses. You have to have the prohibitions. You have to have the things that you can't do in order to be in an environment that then the ahava can flourish. The ahava cannot flourish until you cut away everything else. Think about it almost like a marriage. Until you cut away every other potential spouse in the world, can you focus on what you have and let it flower and develop? Like when there's so many choices, it's hard to focus on any one thing. That's what the lotah says, the ases, zachar, v'shamor, b'dibur echa, they come together, can't have one without the other, and that's just a tie-in of what we had last week. Okay, we got a lot to do. So we're up to now the fourth and final major discussion in the Torah about Shabbos. We started with Shabbos Bereishis, which if you just remember, quick review, what were the highlights of Shabbos Bereishis? I created the heaven, vayichulu, vayichal, vayishvos, the idea of creator of heaven and earth, and all that went into that. The second major parasha that we had was the man. What was the major theme of the discussion of Shabbos of the man? It was an experiential thing. I'm going to take care of you. You don't need anything. You're going to have everything that you need. It's going to fall double on Friday. You can go to sleep at night. Don't go out. Don't think that you need to take care of anything. I have it all covered. What were the halacha? We had very little halachas other than don't go out. Very little else was there other than that experiential concept. Then we had the Aseres HaDibros. We had the Zohar and the Shomer B'Dibur Echad. And the Sheishas Yamin, we had that repeated as well. What we're going to do now is the Mishkan. What I want to do as we learn through it is highlight, you'll highlight it on your own, the concepts that we have not yet seen until now. Despite the fact that we learned Shabbos Bereishis, we learned the Man, we had two Aseres HaDibros, Zohar and Shomer. We're going to now come across some new concepts with the Mishkan that were as of yet not ever mentioned as far as our relationship dynamic to Shabbos. One quick word of background. The first source is source number 28. It is, you'll notice, Shmos Perek Lamed Aleph. This is towards the end of Parshas Kitisa. In the context, I didn't want to burden the sheets with too much. Parshas Truma. Parshas Truma begins in Perek Chaf Hei. Parshas Truma Tetzaveh take up six entire prakim of Mishkan law that is discussed from Hashem to Moshe. The Jewish people have not been told anything yet. Six entire chapters of how to build a Mishkan, how to make the begadim for the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol. Long, long activity. At the end of every detail that Moshe needs to know about the Mishkan, Hashem gives him one last command, and that's the four or five psukim that we will now learn together towards the end of Parshas Kisisa. Shmos Perek Lamed, let's read them together. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe lemor, v'ata, daber el b'nei Yisrael lemor. So again, Hashem is speaking directly to Moshe and saying, in you, v'ata, which is an interesting language, Rashi will note it in a moment, daber el b'nei Yisrael. And you'll tell them, ach, es shabsosai tishmoru. No, be very, we'll translate it loosely, like, ach, es shab, but make sure to observe my Shabbos. Ki osi beini uveinechem ledoroseichem. Because it is a sign between me and between them for all generations. La da'as. That you should know that I am Hashem who sanctifies you. Okay, let's just start with quickly. What are the new concepts in this parsha that we have not yet seen? It's an os. We have not yet seen, not in Shabbos Bereishis, not in the Man, not in the parsha of the Aseres HaDibros, the idea, the phrase
that when you observe Shabbos, this idea is an oath, it's a sign between me and between you for all generations. And it is also Lada'as, that you should know that I am Hashem who sanctifies you. We have not really seen that combination, that somehow keeping Shabbos, that you will know. Let's take a look at a couple of important Rashis. Rashi, right underneath that. Rashi, right away, tells us, V'ata daber al b'nei Yisrael, V'ata meaning you. I just spent six entire prakim telling you to tell the Jewish people to build a Mishkan. And so you might have thought, build a Mishkan, get it done as soon as you can. And if it means working 7 days a week, you work 7 days a week. No. Al yakel be'einecha litchois es ha-shabbos mipnei osa melacha. But there's one thing that takes precedence even over the building of the Mishkan, and that, of course, is Shabbos. And this, we're familiar with this idea. We're going to see it several times this morning, that the combination Shabbos and Mishkan go together to teach us you may not build the Mishkan on Shabbos. And so that's the last thing that Hashem says to Moshe after giving him all the instructions. But now tell them about Shabbos. Remind them. They know about it. Remind them about Shabbos. You can't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. One next Rashi, Acha Shabbos Sosai Tishmoru. Rashi says, Afal pi shetiyu ridufin uzrizin bizrizus hamalacha. I expect you to be with alacrity, with great zrizus, to run after the building of the Mishkan. Still, Shabbos al tidocha mipaneha, but be careful with Shabbos. Every ach and rak, Rashi goes, is like a miut. So even though I want you to build a Mishkan, but I also want you to keep Shabbos. This, of course, is a very famous source where how many explicit examples does the Torah give us of how to keep Shabbos? Not how many are there. How many does the Torah give us? Anybody know?
One.
Excellent. There is one specific example that the Torah is going to give us. We're going to read it in a few moments. And that is, Lo Tziva'aru Esh. Do not light a fire. It's the only thing the Torah tells us that you cannot do on Shabbos. Out of all the Tzivuyim, all the concepts of Shabbos, don't light a fire. Well, how many do we have? So you said it right, 39. It's really much more than 39. 39 are just the principal categories. Each principal category, each Av Malacha has many, many toldos, many, many subcategories underneath them. Where are those categories derived from? This pasuk that we just learned, because Hashem just told Moshe, build me a Mishkan, but don't build it for me on Shabbos. So what do we learn? That means if anything that I would have done to build the Mishkan would be a violation of Shabbos. Otherwise, I could do it. So whatever it would take to build a Mishkan is what I can't do on Shabbos. So Chazal derived from that. They worked out, okay, what did it take to build a Mishkan? So they broke down the 39 principal activities that were required to build a Mishkan. Since Hashem says to Moshe, don't build me a Mishkan on Shabbos, those are the things that we're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Okay, let's keep moving. Next, Rashi. We learned it's an oath. This is the first time we've seen that phrase. That it's a sign. If I were to ask you, what? Explain to me. If your child asks you, someone on the plane, how is Shabbos a sign? What is it a sign for? What does that mean? It's an os. Nuh, could you answer that question after observing Shabbos for however many years it's been? What is the os? What is the sign? So Rashi says two amazing things. Rashi says two amazing things. Ki osi, everyone see where I am? I'm in the Rashi's. Ki osi, beini uveinechem. Os gedola hi beinenu. This is a great sign between us. Shebacharti bochem, that I have chosen you. Behanchili lochem es yom minuchasi leminucha. I gave you my day of rest. Hashem created the world in 7 days. If I were to ask you, stop after Shabbos Brachos, who should keep Shabbos in the world? Everyone. Vayechulu Hashemayim v'haaretz. What does it say about the Jews? Nothing. Vayechalo Elokim v'yom ha'ashvi. What's about the Jews? Nothing. Vayishbos v'yom ha'ashvi. Vayivarech oso. Vayikadesh oso. What does that have to do with the Jews? What does Pesach have to do with the Jews? Everything. What does Sukkot have to do with the Jews? Everything. What does Shavuos have to do with what does Shabbos have to do with the Jews? Nothing. Nothing. Shabbos is Shabbos Brachos. Shabbos is I'm the creator of heaven and earth. I exist, you exist because I created you. That's not like a Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. All of those things we can tie in. Rosh Hashanah, we could also make a larger argument, but leaving that aside for now. Shabbos should be universal.
Who did he give this grift? Go back to the first medrash we learned in the Gemara. When Moshe says to Moshe, go tell the Jewish people I have a very special gift. It's in my beis kinzeh. It's in my storage house. And I only want to give it to the Jewish people. It's an os, Rashi says. What's the sign? I have a day of menucha, and I didn't give it to everybody. Even though it's a sign that I'm here, even though it's a sign that I created heaven and earth, even though it should be universal, I only gave it to you. I only gave it to you as a sign between you and between me. Rashi says that I have chosen you for my Yom Menucha. And then Rashi adds, on the phrase Ladas ki ani Hashem mikadeshkan, that you should know, we're at the end of the Pasuk Yigimel, Ladas, to know that I am Hashem who sanctifies you. I would have translated that, who should know that I am Hashem who sanctified you? I would have thought the Pasuk meant we, us. When Hashem is telling Moshe, tell the Jewish people to keep my Shabbos, because it's a sign between me and between them for all generations. Ladas, I would have translated as that they should know that I am Hashem who sanctified you. Rashi does not say that, he adds a line. He adds a word. You see that Rashi, it's the fourth line in the Rashi. Ladas ha'umos ba. That the nations of the world will know through this sign. Ki ani Hashem mikadishchem. That I am Hashem who has sanctified you. You'll know from lots of reasons. The nations of the world are going to know that you're different through Shabbos. I'm sure you've heard many stories. I'll just add one. There's a fellow who I know very well from Atlanta, Georgia, named Kivi Bernhard. Kivi Bernhard grew up in South Africa. His father was, I believe, was a chief rabbi, if not chief rabbi, a major rav there. And Kivi wrote a book called Leopardology. Hunting for business in difficult times, something like that. He grew up in South Africa. He went on safaris all the time. And he basically wrote a book about the nature of the hunt and how it applies to business. It was a very popular book in the business world. Microsoft wanted to bring him in for one of their conferences. And they built the conference around this conference of this theme of the hunt in the business world. They were going to bring him in as the speaker. He was on a speaker's bureau. The book was a popular book. The speaker's bureau calls him, and they say, Microsoft wants you to be their keynote speaker to open up this conference. This is a big thing. And it turned out it was on Shabbos. So Kivi said, I'm sorry, you know, that I don't do engagements on Shabbos. He gets a call a day later from like the second guy up in Microsoft saying, we structured this whole conference, and we want you to be the keynote speaker. So please, he said, I can't. He said, I double your speaker's fee. He said, I can't. Uncle Moshe, he said, triple your speaker's fee. He said, it's not about money. I can't do it. Guy hangs up in a huff, and they reschedule the conference to open up on Sunday. The guy, he goes, he does his thing. The guy calls Kivi a month later and says, I was just on a flight with Bill Gates. We were flying from here, and we were reviewing various things, and we went over the conference that we had and the speakers. And this thing came up about how we had to move the conference. Like, never happened. Like, we moved the conference to Sunday. He said, what was the deal? He said, well, we built the whole thing around this guy, Kivi, and he wouldn't speak on Saturday. He said, did you offer him more money? He said, yeah. He said, he's a Sabbath observer, and it wasn't a conversation. He wouldn't budge. And Bill Gates said to him, that's what you get when you have a value that can't be bought. Like it doesn't matter. Like, I'm not speaking on Shabbos. It's just the way that it goes. It's an amazing thing. And there are men, our Ben Brofman, I forget who he tells the story, has like one client he used to call, he tells the story all the time. So I want to do it justice. And one guy called like 1,000 times on Shabbos, right? Because he had made a bet with someone, because Ben said to the guy, right? Everyone knows the story, I'm sure, right? So like, whatever you do, I'm not picking up the phone on Shabbos. So this guy, like, I didn't believe it. He made like $1,000, a million, I have some exorbitant bet with a buddy of his. I bet you can, right? So he called, he's like, I'm not picking up on Shabbos. Ladas, not just that we should know that Hashem sanctified us. Ladas ha'umos, that there's a value that cannot be bought. It's not about money. It's about the creator of heaven and earth. And he gave us a gift. And that's just the way that it is. It's just, it's there. Both from the sense that we could sit around the table and our children and us and our families can be present, but it's a gift much bigger than that. It's a gift bigger than all of us. And that is this concept of, it's an os. Okay, Ushmartem es ha-shabbos vayter, Pasuk Yudal, back on the top of source 28. Ushmartem es ha-shabbos ki kodesh yilachem, you will observe and guard Shabbos because it's sanctified and holy to you. Mechal aleha mos, you must. He who violates it will surely be put to death. Ki kol ha-oseh bot melacha, anyone who does melacha on this day. Again, the malacha, we connecting to the reversion, the very first time the word malacha appeared by Chal Elokim is Kol Malachto Asher Asa. Anyone who we do malacha on the day that Hashem finished his malacha, most Yumash shall surely be put to, I skipped the line, Avinichras HaNefeshim Mikerev Ameh, will be cut out from amongst his people. Okay, what new concepts do we have here, Pasuk Yedalad? Punishments! We've learned Shabbos Bereishis. We learned the Man. We learned the Aseret HaDibros, the second set of Aseret HaDibros. What happens at the end of all of those Pesukim if you violate Shabbos? Doesn't say anything. Doesn't say. We got through all of those Parshas. It's not until the Mishkan is instructed and Hashem now tells Moshe, don't forget about my Shabbos. For the first time we get, it's an os. This is a sign between me and between you. And we get the severe punishment. What does it mean to do malach on Shabbos? If you asked that, if you stopped right here and said, okay, death penalty. What is it that I can't do? We don't even have a single example yet. All we have is don't do it. Don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. Because if you do malach on Shabbos, it's a death penalty. Okay, that is new. Take a look at Rashi. Yudalid, most you must, is a miyesh eid nevasah. You only will surely be put to death with witnesses and warning, meaning that's how the Beis Din is going to function, meaning it's a capital crime punishable by a human court. V'nichrason, you get kares below hasra, meaning if the court can't do something, you'll be cut off in a heavenly punishment without the witnesses coming and seeing and warning you. Mechal aleha, what does it mean to desecrate Shabbos? What does that look like? Rashi says, "Hanoheg b'chol b'kedushasa." Very powerful phrase. If you treat the sanctity of Shabbos with chol, chol means like weekday. You treat Shabbos weekday. That is mechalileha. That's to desecrate Shabbos. Okay, we got to go on because there's so much to do. Tosuk Tezva, back in the Pesukim. Sheishas yomim yaseh melacha, for 6 days. Again, Hashem's still talking to Moshe. 6 days you'll do your melacha. V'yom ha-shvi'i, Shabbos, Shabbason, Kodesh la-Hashem. It is a day of rest. It is a day of a Shabbos. It's sanctified, holy to Hashem. Kol ha-osem melacha v'yom ha-shabbos. Mos you must. Again. Now again, we're getting it over and over. There's a third time we get a punishment listed here in these series of Pesukim. And then the psukim that we are probably most familiar with, Vishamru v'nei Yisrael es ha-shabbos, Hashem says to Moshe, the Jewish people will observe Shabbos. La'asos es ha-shabbos, you have to make it a Shabbos. L'dorosam bris olam, all generations, and it will be a bris olam. Again, the concept of an os. Here we have the concept of a bris. Also, the first time we've seen that concept. Beini uvein b'nei Yisrael osi li'olam. Again, between me, between the Jewish people, it is an os, it is a sign. Forever, that sheishas ki sheishas yamim asa Hashem es hashamayim v'yasa'aretz uvayom ha'shvi'i shavas v'yinefash. On the seventh day, he rested and ceased from all activity. Again, this idea that even though it's universal, that for 6 days, but it's a gift, it's a sign between me and between you that you observe this day. One other important Rashi, v'yinefash, and he rested. We mentioned this, I think, last week. Strange concept. What do you mean Hashem rested? Vayichulu means he completed. He pulled back from creation. Vayinafash is like a word of, like I caught my breath. Like I rested. It's a strange word. So Rashi says, in the last Rashi in that section, Kitargumo v'noch, it means that he rested. Kol lasha nofesh, hu lasha nafesh, shemei shiv nafsha, right? You restore your soul. Uneshima so, in your breath. You're out of breath. You're working hard. You rest to catch your breath. What does it mean that Hashem rested? About he who is said, he does not tire. He does not grow weary, meaning Hashem. And all kol po'alo b'ma'amar.
And everything that he does is with a mimer. Vayomer Elokim, Vayomer Elokim, Yehi Or. Why does he need to rest? Heksiv minucha ba'atzmo. Where does that, what does that phrase mean? So Rashi says, l'shaber ha'ozen. It's just to give you a sense for a human being who can't grasp concepts. Mashi yechola l'shmoa.
The Rashi is an amazing thing here. The idea of ayinofash, Hashem doesn't need rest. He's a vayichulu kind of being, meaning I create, I stop to show that I'm in charge.
Vayinofash, to rest, I'm speaking to you. You as a human being understand what it means to run, to light candles. Like, we understand that. That's vayinofash. Hashem doesn't need that, but we do. So he used the language just that we should grasp that which is going on.
What is it about that shoresh? You know, you can say vayanach, right? But it sounds like nefesh. Like this.
Yeah, to regain your soul. In other words, I feel like I'm losing my soul when I'm tired, and I need to regain my soul when I rest.
Is it telling us something about the spiritual aspect of
Shabbat? Yes, we mentioned also there's a concept of a neshama yisera, that yeah. There's this additional soul. Mm-hmm. So vayinofash is not only did I regain my soul by catching my breath, but I even have more. Exactly. Exactly. The Sforno actually says that comment. If you go down one section to the Sforno, the second comment of the Sforno, l'chainase hashvi bal nefesh yisera. What is added by using that word vayinofash? That I gained my soul with a nefesh yisera, tosefes hachana, more lahasig mashe kivein alav akel yizbrach b'shleimus pulaso. When we say nasa adam b'tzalmenu kid musenu, I am more like Hashem on Shabbos. My soul expands. Vayinofash, I rest, and my soul expands over Shabbos because I've just removed all those other things, all those distractions that go on in life. Okay. More to do, but we have other things. So let's keep moving. Okay, that's the first discussion of Shabbos in the context of Mishkan. Primary points are building the Mishkan cannot be done on Shabbos because whatever would go into building the Mishkan now becomes forbidden on Shabbos. We're introduced to the concept of an os, a sign, a special gift that Hashem gave this to us. It is a bris, and it is not only a sign for us, but it is a sign to all the nations of the world that a Jew cannot be budged. It is not a money thing. It is simply, it's a value thing. And there are very few things in life. And it's worth, just to conclude that last thought. In the world around us, there are few things that cannot be bought with money. There are a few things, not a lot. Because it's worth it. Whatever values you have, at a certain point you can say, okay, it's worth it. It's worth it. Shabbos is a thing where Jews have for centuries, and the early America in the 1900s, and it's Shabbos. It's a value that's greater than money because I'm testifying to the concept of something far, far bigger. Okay, right after the parsha that we just read, these psukim of Vishamra v'nei Yisrael l'sas Shabbos, l'sos l'sas Shabbos v'dor v'yisraelam, right after that we have the Chet Ha'egel. That takes us a few prakim in the end of Sefer Shmos. We have the Chet Ha'egel. Moshe then goes up to Davin, and then Hashem forgives him, and he goes back up again for the second set of Luchos, and he comes back down, and he comes down with the second set of Luchos on Yom Kippur. And that's the beginning of Parshas Vayakel. And Vayakel is now where Moshe, now after the debacle of the Chet Ha'egel, is now going to teach the Jewish people about all that he had learned about the Mishkan, because now we need to build the Mishkan. And that's source number 29. And that begins the last two parshios in Sefer Shmos, Vayakel and Pekudei. As you know, Vayakel is all about the building of the Mishkan, and Pekudei about the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol. We put them all together, and that's how we conclude the Sefer with the building of the Mishkan. But there is two introductory psukim before Moshe tells the people for the next two parshios about the Mishkan. And that is what we're about to read. Vayakel Moshe Eskol Adas B'nei Yisrael. Moshe has now come down. Rashi points out, right? We'll just read right away the Rashi underneath that. L'mocharas Yom HaKippur. This is the day after Yom Kippur. K'sheyored min ahar. Because on Yom Kippur he was forgiven. On Yom Kippur he was given the second set of luchos. And now he comes down to instruct the Jewish people about building the Mishkan. So he gathers the people back up to the psukim. Here are the matters that Hashem has commanded us. And he's about to list two full parshios of Mishkan-related matters. But before that, he says, Sheshes yamim te'asem alacha, huvayom ha'shvi'i yelachem kodesh. 6 days you work, 7th day is holy, Shabbos Shabbason la'Hashem, kol ho'isevo malacha yumas. Anyone who does malacha shall be put to death. Lo siva'aru eish b'chol moshvo sechem b'yom ha'shabbos. And here is that example we mentioned. You may not light a fire in all of your dwellings on Shabbos. Now, what has he added that the Jewish people have never heard before? They knew Shabbos from the Aseres HaDibros, but he adds the death penalty. That he absolutely condenses what Hashem had told him in about 5 psukim on the top of our page. He condenses into 2 psukim. He gives them the idea of the death penalty, the punishment, and a specific example of lo siva'aru eish. The Gemara has a big machlokas as to why is Eish pulled out as an example, whether or not it's to limit fire as a lesser punishment, or as the way that we understand it, what's Paskin LaHalacha, that is to teach you that each one of the malachas is its own category. Meaning, if you look out of the 613, how many are Shabbos-related mitzvos? Out of 613, how many are categorized as Shabbos of 613? Any guesses?
Two.
Excellent. Zachor and Shamor. Under that, so if a person, let's say a person forgot it was Shabbos, if a person forgets and does a significant avera, so he has to bring a korban. Let's say a person woke up in the middle of the night and forgot it was Shabbos. Or they remembered it was Shabbos, but they forgot you're not allowed to light a candle. And then they forgot that you're not allowed to water your grass. And then they forgot that you're not allowed to cut the... So how many korbanos do you do? So because we pulled... The Gemara learns because Shabbos, is pulled out as a specific example, each one would get its own korban, even though it's technically listed all under Shabbos, but if you forgot fire, and you forgot cooking, and you forgot watering, and you forgot all those things, each one would get its own korban. If you forgot it was Shabbos, then you only bring one korban, because you really made one mistake. You forgot it was Shabbos. Everything that you did is because you forgot it was Shabbos. If you forgot that you can't do this and do that and do that, and do that, you can. That's beyond our discussion. Let's move that. The Ramban points out on the bottom of your page, out of all the specific examples, so why do you choose fire? Let's say, okay, you need to pull out one to teach me this lesson that each one is considered its own thing. Why fire out of all the examples? So the Ramban says, because in the days of until recently, and even now, if you wanted oneg, if you wanted to enjoy yourself, and you had to choose one malacha that you could do to give you personal pleasure, it would be fire. So that you could warm yourself, you could take a hot shower, you can cook food, all... Fire would be the critical element to Oneg. So the Ramban says, that's why the Torah highlights and says, even though I told you to enjoy yourself, even though I told you you're going to have 3 meals, even though I told you to put on nice clothing, even though it's a special day, but limits. Lo siva ruesh. You have to figure out how to do that without lighting any type of fire. Yes?
This is related to what you just said. How could you catch up? I remember when I was much younger, somebody who lived in this area told me about a lady who woke up, forgot it was Shabbos, got dressed to go to the gym, got into the car, went to the gym. As she's driving, she passed her shoe and she said, oh, there must be a bris, you know, she told me something. And then she realized when she got there, it was Shabbos. She had done everything as if it was Sunday.
Yeah, that happens. Totally happens. That's the chorus, Yom HaShabbos, the Kacham. Okay, now, besides for the details of this psukim, we have, yes.
You said that this is a summary of what Moshe said, what Hashem told him. But why is there no or bris?
Correct. I don't have an answer to that question. Moshe does not describe the language of os or bris. It's possible that he said more and we're not told it in the way the Torah records it. But what's recorded for us, I agree with your question. Meaning Hashem gave Moshe a little bit more information, the os, the bris. We have less, what's actually instructed. So whether or not Moshe said more and it's not told us, I agree with your question. I do not have an answer for that question. Next series, we'll have to have another Shabbos part two. Okay, here's a big question. Yeah, last question, we got to finish up. Yes?
Rabbi, you said about lighting the fire. Could that be something to do with preparation that we require to prepare before Shabbos?
Also, yeah, part of that. Meaning, in other words, because you can't do it on Shabbos, it's going to force you to prepare on Shabbos. Yeah, we didn't even that's one of the things that we didn't even really get to, the whole idea of hachana for Shabbos. There's so many things to talk about. Okay, we got to finish up with what we have. There's a major problem here that many of the Mefarshim address. There's a major problem as follows.
when Hashem teaches us about the Mishkan, what's the order? What's the Seder HaDvarim? First, he spends six prakim giving us all the details about the Mishkan. And then at the very end, the last thing he says is, Acha Shabso Sai Tishmor. Don't forget about my Shabbos. You have to keep my Shabbos. When Moshe gathers all the people to tell them about the Mishkan, he reverses the order. What's the first thing he tells them is, don't forget about Shabbos, Sheishas Yomim. That's his opening line. And then as he's got them all together, then the next two parshios are all the details about the Mishkan. So, a little Farshim note, like he didn't exactly follow the structure. Hashem gave him instructions for the Mishkan and then Shabbos, and Moshe does Shabbos and then the instructions for the Mishkan. So I want to share with you two things. So the first thing is this concept in general that Shabbos is tied into the Mishkan. Meaning, whichever way it goes, Hashem puts it Mishkan Shabbos, Moshe does Shabbos Mishkan, but what's, if you did it like, as Rabbi David Foreman likes to do, what does he call those things? A chiastic structure. Like, what do we have here? We have like Mishkan, Shabbos, Mishkan. Like, so surrounding, hugging Shabbos is the Mishkan on the end, you got Shabbos in the middle, the Mishkan on the outside. What's that idea? And we find a lot of similarities between the Beis HaMikdash and between Shabbos, in the sense that there's special clothing. We wear special clothing, there's special clothing in the Beis HaMikdash. There are special foods, of course, the preparations, the way, the shulchan, the menorah, the candle, the light, there's like a lot of things that connect just the way that we experience Shabbos with the way that we would experience the Mishkan. And I want to share in source 30, so in other words, not, besides that, the Torah puts them together. We learn all the malachas that I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos from the building of the Mishkan. They're tied into each other, this concept of Shabbos and Mishkan. So Rav Shimshon Pinchas, we've quoted the Sefer a couple of times in his Shabbos Malkasa, says as follows. It's just a beautiful idea as we wrap up what we've been doing. Beis HaMikdash, top of Pesaurus, page number 10, Haya HaMakom Shebo Bipoel Ulehedya. The Beis HaMikdash was the place where in action, and explicitly, it was obvious, his galak kvod shemayim ba'olam. When you make the Beis HaMikdash, you saw Hashem's presence. I had a Rebbe in Canterbury Avenue used to always say, you read through Tanakh, and the Jewish people, we're not always perfect people. We do lots of things wrong, and we get taken to task all the time. But there was one thing you never find once in all of Tanakh. You never find a kofar. You don't find somebody who denies Hashem's presence. They might also serve other gods. That was the major avera of the Jewish people of the time, the desire for Avodah Zarah. But it wasn't that this is true and that's not. It's like, I also want to do this. Why could you not? Why do you never find, like today we find kofrim all the time, people that I got here, right, left, and center. Why don't you find that in the times of Tanakh? Then because, here, come to Beis HaMikdash. Come. Take it by the hand. You bring in the Beis HaMikdash, and you're like, here it is. You can sense it. You can feel it. It was the scala, the miracles that took place. There was a presence that filled the Beis HaMikdash, which since the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, we haven't had. 2,500 years, the world has not had that presence. And as a result, we have all sorts of problems in the world. But that was the place where Hashem's presence is revealed. And therefore, specifically, David and Shlomo, who were the kings of Klal Yisrael, the Merkava, the idea of a king was to reveal the Sakein Olam, to fix the world. Therefore, it's specifically that the kings who have to build the Beis HaMikdash. Going to the second paragraph, V'kach hu mamish inyan HaShabbos. The idea of what the Beis HaMikdash was, the revelation of Hashem's presence in this world, is Shabbos. As we spoke about the Medrash, like when Hashem gave us the Torah, everything was silent. And when everything is silent and you hear the hum of the air conditioner, you hear the creaks in your house, all those sounds, when Shabbos comes and the world is shoves uvotel, everything stops. You feel this, here in Chutz Laaretz, you know, the world doesn't stop, only we do. When you go to Tisrael and you're in Yerushalayim, you're in a certain neighborhood and like, Shabbos starts at a whole town is quiet. Mimela, when Hashem's presence is revealed, Nishar Lehedya Yichudo Shel Hashem Yisbar. What's left when Shabbos comes in? The presence, the oneness of Hashem, V'niskav Hashem Levado Bayom Hahu. Like Hashem is there, becomes revealed. Nimsa Shehashabbos Hiya Megala Kvodu Bolam V'zu Ma'uz Midas HaMalchus. Shabbos is the revelation of Hashem's presence in the world, which is Malchus. Nimsa Shabbos u Beis Hamikdash. Shema b'Yisodim Inyan Echad. Shabbos is the Beis Hamikdash. What the Beis Hamikdash was is in place. You can go to the Beis Hamikdash and see Hashem's presence. Shabbos is in time. When Shabbos comes and everything stops and His presence is revealed, that is the essence, the revelation of Hashem's presence. And therefore, the last part, HaKesher, Bein Shabbos, the Beis HaMikdash, Pshuto. Their connection is simple and obvious. Shekein Mahuso, Shal Beis HaMikdash, the essence of what the Beis HaMikdash is, Makom Shebo Shochein, HaKadosh Baruch, the place where Hashem's presence is, Zemamish, Inyan HaShabbos. And so when the Torah says in this last section, when you build me a Mishkan, don't forget about Shabbos, tying the two together, Mishkan, Shabbos, Shabbos, Mishkan, because they are married to each other. The acceptance, the observance of Shabbos is bringing Hashem's presence into this world in the same way that the Beis HaMikdash did. In the same way that you can go to the Beis HaMikdash and see and feel Hashem's presence in a way you didn't elsewhere, you can do that same thing on Shabbos. And that's what we do. That's the os, that's the gift that we have, this bringing in of Hashem's presence, like Mamish, the Beis HaMikdash. There's a halacha you're familiar with. What happens when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos? Now, Tisha B'Av, right, is the day, the destruction of mourning, of fasting. So we don't fast on Shabbos. Not only do we not fast on Shabbos, so we push it off to Sunday. What does Shabbos look like when Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos? Looks like a regular Shabbos. The language of the Shulchan Aruch is, you have a su'uda like Shlomo HaMelech, in the height of his reign, Shabbos.
And the same with
Shiva. Okay, but that's a different concept. Shabbos and Tisha B'Av, what we're mourning, what we're grieving, it's like it's here. Because they're the Inyan Echad, the same concept of being able to reveal Hashem's presence, that which we grieve and mourn, but we have a semblance of it. So you can't limit your Shabbos. That is our replacement, in a sense.
What about Yom Kippur?
Yom Kippur is an astira. In other words, the fasting of Yom Kippur is not like the fasting of Tisha B'Av of mourning. That's a Shabbos Shabboson. And therefore, we do fast on Yom Kippur, which is its own discussion again. We touched on many things. Okay, last thing we got to do. One last point. I want to talk about a beautiful Rav Sachs, a beautiful comment article from by Jonathan Sachs, Zichrono Livracha, on this question, which we left off. Okay, well, why does Moshe switch the order? So I'll pose that as a question. The Gemara poses this question. You may have heard this over the years. It's a great philosophical debate. You're traveling, in today's day and age, this is less common because we have our cell phones, but person gets stranded, it happens all the time. They're just as today's newspaper reported, there were a group of teenagers in Israel in the north. They got lost, their cell phones died, they got stranded out in a forest, it took a hole to do to find them. Happens. Person traveling through a desert in the times of the Gemara, much more common, you lose track of the days. All of a sudden, you wake up, you got heat stroke, you woke up, and you're like, I don't know how long I slept for. I don't know what day is today. I don't have anybody to ask. My cell phone ran out of juice. I'm stuck. What do I do with Shabbos? What do I do? I have no idea what day it is right now. So, Nu, what do you say?
Pick a day,
okay? A couple of options. One is just pick a day. That's one option. There are two more options.
Every day Shabbos.
Okay, in halacha, it's sort of like that, but let's... That's a safety net, right? That's a safety net. Okay, what are your other options?
Start counting.
And what's the other option?
Count Shabbos.
Excellent, right? In other words, assume like, what was the first answer?
Pick a day.
Start counting day one, or make Shabbos, and then start counting. Look at the Gemara in source number 31. Amar Rav Huna. Person was traveling on the road of Amidbar, ve'ene yodeya emosai Shabbos. He doesn't know. He got lost. He lost track of time. He's by himself. He doesn't know what to do. Mona shisha yomim u'mishamer yom echad. Says Rav Huna, start counting. You don't know what day it is? Today is day one. Today is Sunday. Hayom yom rishon l'Shabbos. You count. On the seventh day, you observe Shabbos. Chiyav Rav Omer, Mishamer Yom Echad. The day you realize, I don't know what day it is, Shabbos, and then Mona Shisha, and then you count six from there. Says the Gemara, what are they arguing about? What's the machlokas? Whether or not you should count 6 days and then make Shabbos, or whether or not make Shabbos and then count six? Says the Gemara, beautiful thing. You know what they're arguing about? Go back to Shabbos Bereishis. From Hashem's perspective, how did things work?
He worked 6 days.
He worked 6 days. He created. When he was done, 6 days you work, and on the seventh day you make Shabbos. What was Adam HaRishon's experience? Adam HaRishon was created when on the sixth day? At the very end of the sixth day, Adam HaRishon is created. What is Adam HaRishon's experience in this world? Shabbos. From the moment he was created, getting ready for Shabbos, it's the last 15 minutes. Imagine being born. That's it. It's the first thing you got to do is get showered, change your clothes, make your bed. Shabbos. And then he worked for it. He didn't have. Adam HaRishon did not first experience 6 days of work and then Shabbos. Adam HaRishon had Shabbos. And then 6 days. Says the Gemara, that's their machlokas. When you're stuck, and I don't know, I need to recreate Shabbos, so to speak. So whose perspective do I mimic when I don't know what to do? Do I recreate Hashem's perspective? If my job is to recreate Hashem's perspective, then 6 days I work, and I'll count six and make Shabbos. Or do I recreate Adam HaRishon's experience? And if I recreate Adam HaRishon's experience, then right away I should make Shabbos, and then I'll count my 6 days. That's what the Gemara says to explain this machlokas as to which way to go. Says, I need to finish this talk because we're running out of time. Says Rabbi Sachs, these are the two approaches that you find in Chumash. When Hashem gives Moshe instructions for building the Mishkan, what's the order that Hashem does? Build, 6 prakim of how to build a Mishkan. And then after I told you how to build a Mishkan, what does Hashem tell Moshe? Make Shabbos. Moshe gathers the people together and says, here's our job. What does he do? He tells them about Shabbos first, and then how we're going to spend the next 6 days working. So that the parallel of what happened in Shabbos Bereishis is repeated in the building of the Mishkan, the bringing of Hashem's presence into this world, what Shabbos does. Hashem does it in the way that he did it. Work for 6 days, and then he tells us about Shabbos. Moshe instructs the people in the way that mankind experiences Shabbos, which is Shabbos first, and then we're going to build a Mishkan. Says Rabbi Sachs, that's beautiful enough as it is. It gets deeper. What is this concept? When I first was like working, it was like never really stopped to think about it. That we're so used to the idea of Sheshes Yamim and then Shabbos. Sheshes Yamim and then Shabbos. That's not Adam HaRishon's experience. He got a Shabbos for free. Without the work. He had a Shabbos and then he worked. Why? Why is that mankind's experience and why is it so different than Hashem's experience? I want to read it. It's so beautiful. It would be a crime to try to say over my own words, Rabbi Sachs' written words, because they're so magnificent. On the bottom of page 10, says Rabbi Sachs, when it comes to divine... How much time do we have to finish this up? Oh, okay. Yeah. When it comes to divine creation, there is no gap between intention and execution. There's no problem between what I set out to do and what's going to happen. Vayomer Elokim Yehior, Yehior. Oh, I wasn't expecting this delay. I wasn't expecting this to go wrong. No, that's not how it goes. Vayomer Elokim, this is what's going to be. That's what's going to be. God knows in advance how things will turn out. With human beings, however, there is no such thing as I'm going to do X, and then exactly as I planned in the timing and the structure. That's not how we function. And the only surprising part of the statement that I just made is that we sometimes still think it should be that way. We still think that when we make plans, it's going to happen the way that we intended. But with human beings, it's otherwise. We cannot see the outcome at the outset. A great novelist may not know how the story will turn out until he's written it. Yes, he or she has an idea, but then by the time it's done, this isn't exactly what I thought it was going to be.
not a composer, not a symphony, not an artist, not a painting, never. Creativity is fraught with risk, all the more so with human history. Revolutions never turn out as planned. Policies designed to help the poor may have the opposite effect. That's just the way that it goes. Okay, now what should we do with this? A human being sets out on a mission and it doesn't, you know in advance it's not going to go the way you want it to go. So one alternative, he says, okay, let them happen as they will. Like, whatever. He says, no, says Rabbi Sacks, this kind of resignation is wholly out of keeping with the Judaic view of it. We don't know, let things happen without any purpose. Whatever happens, that, no, that's not how we plan, that's not how we live. There is another solution, he says, unique, as far as I know, to Torah Judaism, which is to reveal the end at the beginning. And this is the great meaning of Shabbos. Not simply a day of rest, it's the anticipation of the end of history, the Messianic age. On it, we recover the lost harmonies of the Garden of Eden. We do not strive to do, we are content to be. Oh, what a beautiful language. On the one day, again, think of that crib. Think of being forced out of certain things. As long as I can do, what do human beings therefore tend to do? To do. And you say, take a breather. I can't. What's the one day you can be content to be? Where there's nothing else you can do. You can't check another email. You can't make another sale. You can't make another phone call. I can be. The day that I'm content to be. That day. Think about what it was like in the Midbar to have food in your cabinet. The only night that you went to sleep with food in your cabinet for the next day. No worry, no daiga. It's Friday night. We relive that every Shabbos. Where I'm no longer content to do, I can be content just to be. We are not permitted to manipulate the world. Instead, we celebrate Hashem as the supreme work of art. No exercising of power, no dominance over other human beings, not even over animals. Rich and poor inhabit the Sabbath alike with equal dignity and freedom. Says Rabbi Sacks, no utopia has ever been realized. Utopia, of course, means no place. With one exception, the world to come is where we'll have that utopia. And the reason is, we rehearse it every week. One day in seven. It is a Shabbos, is a full dress rehearsal for an ideal society that has not yet come to pass, but will. We're aiming, we're looking for, we're on a, it's a dress rehearsal every week for what that final end will be. Says Rabbi Sacks, concluding this whole session that we've been doing for 6 weeks, we are now begin to sense the full symbolic drama of the making of the Mishkan. In the wilderness, long before they crossed and entered into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem told them to build a miniature universe. It was going to be a place of carefully calibrated order, meaning everything in the Mishkan was detailed. How many amos? How high? How wide? What materials do you use? Just like the universe is a place of carefully calibrated order. And just so, did the Mishkan have to be exact in its construction? And the building would be a symbolic prototype of the building of a society. As it was the earthly home for a divine presence, so would it become for the Jewish people's honoring Hashem's laws. The last paragraph, the ultimate end of such a society, is the harmony of existence that we have not yet experienced. Living as we do in a world of work and striving, of conflict, competition, the world we live in is so far from a world of harmony. So far from a perfected world in which everyone is content to be and not just content to do. Hashem, however, wanted us to know what we were aiming at so that we would not lose our way in the wilderness of time. What was the first thing Adam HaRishon had to experience? He creates a Shabbos. He's never worked a day in his life. He hasn't done anything. What does he need Shabbos for? Because we need a vision of where we're headed, of what it's supposed to look like. We cannot experience the 6 days of the work week if you have not already experienced a Shabbos of what it is you're working towards. And therefore, when it came to the human execution of the building, Shabbos comes first. The first thing that Moshe tells the people is, Sheshes Yamim Taseh Melacha, we're going to keep Shabbos. Now I'm going to tell you how to build a Mishkan. Even though, in global terms, in Shabbos Bereishis, it's going to come last. Just like in the creation of Shabbos Bereishis, and in the Messianic era, it's last. But our human experience has to be first.
Hashem made known at the end, already at the beginning. What the end was going to be in the beginning, and fulfilled rest that follows creative labor. The peace that one day will take the place of strife, so we can catch a glimpse of the destination. His last line, with this we conclude, only those who know where they are traveling will get there, however fast or slowly they go. So Hashem, he's a poet. Hashem created Shabbos Breishis last. And we say that all the time. Sheshes Yamim, Sheshes Yamim, Vayom HaShvi. But Adam HaRishon did not. Adam HaRishon did not. He needed a Shabbos first, because you need to have a destination. Where am I going? This will remind you of a very well-known, oft-quoted statement of the sages. If the Jewish people would only observe, how many Shabbosim will Mashiach come?
Two.
Two, Chazal say. Just one Shabbosim will all be free. But you need two Shabbosim. Two Shabbosim. I mean, why do Chazal say two? Because you need to have the one before. You can't have a six-day work week unless you have the Shabbos before to know what that 6 days is like. You need the two. Adam HaRishon had that. This machlokas, you're lost in the desert. Whose approach do we follow? The godly approach? Or from man's kind? This is what Moshe did when he taught us in the Mishkan. He flips the order and he gives us Shabbos first, and then you build a Mishkan. Because this is our trial run. It is our dress rehearsal every week. L'yom Shekulo Shabbos, to a day that's going to be entirely like Shabbos. We're going to know what it's like because we have a chance to experience it every week. To bring the Beis HaMikdash into our homes. To bring the same inyan, the same concept, is literally that which Shabbos is. It's connected to the building of the Mishkan. And that's why, talk about the severity of the punishment. You strike a match, most you must. We didn't really even get, how could it be so severe? The Beis HaMikdash is in your home. It's Hashem's presence, filling the world. Mechalelecha, he who treats that profane, who takes that day of Kedusha and destroys it, it's that same level of walking into the Beis. You can't. There's no room. That's the holy. Okay, we left so much on the table, but we have to conclude because time is up. Time is up. We should be zoicha to experience that Shabbos always as the Shabbos of Gracious, as the Shabbos of Aman, Shabbos of the Seres Adibras and the Mishkan, and bring the Ribbono Shel Olam into our homes each and every Shabbos. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.